The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Friday, August 31st, 2018. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun, sitting in for Bill, who is winding up a beautiful vacation in Alaska. You can check out some of his great photos and thoughts from his trip on his Facebook page. Just type in Bill Buckmaster and you'll find him. The show is heard live Monday through Friday, noon to 1, right here on KVOI, 10:30 a.m., and we're live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. The Friday show also re-airs on Saturday at 7 in the morning, and you can also find archives of all the past shows at buckmastershow.com. Let's take a moment to acknowledge the Buckmaster Show media partner, something Bill likes to do every week, TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News, Sahuarita Sun, Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly. You'll find them all listed at Bill's website. There are more than just those. In today's Friday Focus interview, we'll be talking to Dr. Manny Valenzuela. He is the superintendent of the Sahuarita Unified School District. And I am joined in studio by Dylan Smith. He's the publisher and editor of TucsonSentinel.com. Long week, Dylan?
Hey, Bill, I know you're listening out there. Why did you choose this week to go on vacation? Really, man?
Because of the primary, yeah.
Well, not just the election, but McCain has been of note all week long, it's been interesting, to say the least.
Well, I know Bill, and he likes to be in the mix, so he's probably just a little dejected, although I'm sure that he found some solace in Alaska. I'm not in Alaska right now, so good for that. We'll get back to that, actually, in a little bit. If you want to join the discussion, you are always welcome. Call the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040. Dr. Valenzuela, welcome to the show.
Hello, good afternoon, Dan, and thank you. I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Good. School's back in session, and maybe I'm old school, but I'm still not used to kids going to school before Labor Day, but we've been doing it for years. They're back in. How are things going? Did you start the year fully staffed? That's really my main question.
We did. We are very close to fully staffed. You know, that definition is probably a relative term these days, but we've been working really hard to target the recruitment and retention of our staff through professional development, partnerships with the university, and also creating an environment that's a place that people want to be. And I think we've had some success, and the year's off to a great start.
And you've had to get a little creative in some of the recruiting efforts and maybe starting earlier than normal. And what's changed as far as public schools recruiting new teachers in the last 2 or 3 years?
You know, given the supply and demand of this issue for a variety of different reasons, we have to start looking at our employees as like our customers. And we are competing for the best people that we can find, the most highly qualified, smartest, student-centered people. And by doing that, we've got to look for creative solutions such as developing and training new teachers collaboratively, targeting people who are vested in our communities, and making it a place where people want to be through incentives, environment, you know, family fun nights, and the little things we do to kind of try and set ourselves apart.
And really, there are two questions here. One is that you need to recruit new teachers to the district, but even before that, you have to recruit students to teaching. Do people want to become teachers? Are you finding fewer of them wanting to do that? And Dylan can back me on this, that in journalism, because of what's happened to the industry, it's a little tougher to kind of convince people that it's still necessary. Lots of people are reading what we do. It's just they're reading it in different ways. It's kind of still tough, though, to recruit to the industry.
But both of those aren't just, you know, jobs you jump into. They're vocations that take commitment to learning about it before you start doing it. You have to know what you're doing.
Not just anybody's cut out for it either, and teaching is the same way, but again, is it tougher to recruit students to become teachers?
Well, like Dylan said, you know, it's always, and I've always thought of it as kind of a vocation, something that is beyond just a job. And I think it's always been that way, but I do concur, Dan, that given a lot of the changing pressures and demands on the job in terms of student accountability and reliance on test scores, in addition to budgetary constraints, increased costs of college education, and relatively stagnant salaries over the course of the last several years, it's created a challenge. I mean, that would be pretty evident. And you do have to be more intentional, persistent, and creative in how you address those challenges.
There used to be the, likelihood of a long-term, very solid middle-class income if you became a teacher. And that seems to be much further out on the horizon if you are a young teacher these days.
If you put pluses and minuses to the variables that I just identified, education and salary and demands of the job, it creates some stresses, and the minuses tend to add up. But I tell people I'd still recommend it to my own kid. It's still a beautiful profession. It's a noble one, and it's one where there are many rewards, and now we're working to try and make an impact on the tangibles that allow people to at least hopefully aspire to have a solid middle class life and lots of opportunities.
Just for basis of comparison for some of the listeners out there, and I think I ask you this probably every time we're on the show together, but just real quick, compare your district to the other ones up here in Tucson that people might be a little bit more familiar with, as far as number of schools and number of students and et cetera.
Absolutely. We're a growing community, although growth has slowed like it has in a lot of places in the Metro Tucson area. But we serve almost 6,400 students. We're located down in Sahuarita. We're currently constructing our ninth school, which is about twice as many as we had in 2005 when I went down there to start working in Sahuarita. So we're a growing community in many different ways and an exciting place to be.
It is, you and I talked earlier this year, and I would say, what is your priority? And of course, you think that what you're going to say is, well, educating our students, building a future. The priority really, though, is student safety. And that is a strain on the budget that perhaps in years past we haven't seen. And people are critical of dollars actually going into the classroom. But the fact is, student safety has become a major, major expense, not only a concern over the past, say, decade or so.
Those types of discussions about dollars into the classroom are exciting in that they focus on the importance of what happens in the classroom. That is the core of what we do. But you're right. It kind of doesn't always acknowledge the fact that just because something doesn't directly fit into that objective doesn't mean it's not significant. When we look at the context of our world, and the stresses and the demands and the safety-related concerns, we would be remiss if we didn't focus first on maintaining safe environments. And we've done that through a variety of different deployment of resources, and I'm unapologetic for that. It's important. We've done that through technology, through cameras on all of our buses and all of our campuses. We've done that through resourceful investment in school resource officers and school safety monitors. Our override is up for renewal this year, and we pay for a number of school monitors to just have people visibility and many sets of eyes walking and reinforcing and addressing concerns so that we can be proactive and hopefully prevent some of the horrific things we've heard about across our country.
We had the walkout earlier this year, Red for Ed, a lot of teachers across the state just pushing for more money for education to go to various parts of it. We saw it in your school district. A lot of the teachers voted to walk out. Your concern at the end of it, as voiced to me, was what are the effects of this walkout going to have going forth on campus? Because not everybody was in agreement. Some wanted to stay. Some wanted to walk out. Are you seeing divisions on campus among teachers who are yes versus no? What are you seeing right now? Is there any fallout?
I think that what you addressed is a fair assessment of my concerns. I think any time that such drastic measures as a job action take place in any industry, you always worry just by the very nature of such a thing that it's going to create wedges and kind of divisions. And coming back, that was something that that was and is a priority, is that we focus on the commonality, on the important work that we're here to do. And I've been very happy and very pleased that we've come back strong. We have many exciting initiatives. We have many challenges to overcome. And in order to maximize the addressing of those issues and make sure that we continue to serve our students at the very highest level, we have to be unified. And I'm pleased and can honestly relate that we are cohesive, we are focused, and we're working hard to make progress.
Dylan, I'm going to throw this to you because I don't want to put Manny on the spot because he's not really supposed to express opinion on these types of things. But the Invest in Ed measure that we thought was going to be on the November ballot has been knocked off by the courts. It would have increased taxes on higher income individuals to pay for education, but the courts found that an omission of parts of the measure on the petitions made it potentially confusing. It is not going to be something we're going to see in November. What do you think?
As far as the effect on the election? Is that what you're wondering about?
Would it have really addressed all the issues we have in education?
All the issues? No, certainly not. I mean, there are so many problems going on with our educational system right now. Challenges, not that they're insurmountable, but there are a whole lot of things that need to be dealt with. And chief among those is, of course, funding. And it would have addressed that in a major, major way.
Yeah,
the leverage to deal with many other things that are just competing priorities right now that can't all be dealt with a pot of money that is available.
You think it would have passed?
Yes, I do think it would have passed. Now with it off the ballot, will there be the same sort of fervor amongst the supporters of it to still turn out and have their say in a different way by, backing candidates who were for it, by opposing candidates who were already on record against this, and perhaps in a very drastic way, voting against the justices, who the two Supreme Court justices who are up for retention, who were part of why this is not going to be on the ballot. You know, people still have their opportunity to have an indirect say,
right,
if they so desire. And for those who were so adamantly opposed to this measure, in the same way, conversely, they can, express their feelings still at the ballot box in a way about this measure, as well as the other one that was booted off the ballot, the Outlaw Dirty Money initiative.
Right.
And which is not going to be on.
Is that official?
You know I hate that word.
I know.
Official.
We'll see. That one's still hanging by a thread as far as I'm aware, but probably not. Okay. You are listening to the Buckmaster Show. We are talking to Dr. Manny Valenzuela of the Sarita Unified School District. We'll be right back for more of our Friday Focus interview.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show features Arizona newsmakers and more than two dozen Buckmaster Show contributors. Everything from foreign affairs to the arts is on the table and open for discussion, and of course, your calls from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. Buckmaster, weekdays noon to 1 on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's voice.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for Bill. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle.
Oh,
it's awesome. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They're even open for lunch. Go to buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. One of your favorites, Dylan. I know that.
You know it.
Yep, so good stuff. Okay, we are with Dr. Manny Valenzuela of the Sahuarita Unified School District. I want to get back to what I'm going to assume is one of the frustrations for a lot of teachers, and that is all the time that they need to spend teaching for a standardized test. What is your overall thought about standardized tests and AZ merit? We just got some results, not all of them yet, but what do you think about these? Is it a measure of a school?
You know, Dan, you and I and probably Dylan are not that far apart in age, and we could all attest to the fact that even back in our era of education, testing is synonymous with school.
And Iowa so, Basics.
Iowa Basics. California Achievement Test, you know. And standardized tests have always been a part of that. And I think that in as much as we're using them as tools to assess strengths and refinements, whether you're talking about the individual child in the classroom or about a particular program or the effectiveness of a particular school, directions, refinements, et cetera, I think the challenges have been in regards to our societies becoming very enamored and very overly vested and putting too much stock in labeling schools, ranking schools, making money decisions towards certain schools over others based overly weighted on those factors. I think that the reason is because there are so many complexities and the effects of what goes into the achievement of students it's not easy to make it such a simple determination. And when we try to do that, we do things that are not valid nor in the best interest of what we were trying to do in the first place.
Okay. And we have a caller. We are going to take the call from Matthew. He's got a call about the new Amazon facility that's coming in. Matthew, you there?
Yeah. You know, Manny, the Amazon location is going to be on the southeast side. Obviously, the freeway is going to provide access to a lot of those employees that already probably, you know, we get a lot of Raytheon employees and a lot of the tech people. Has the county reached out to you as a school district and said, hey, we're expecting X number of employees, they're bringing, you know, this potentially could be kids, with them. Are you guys, I know that Vail's already at full capacity and has to add extra high schools. where are you guys on accommodating if you have an influx of employees with families? Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for the question, Matt. Growth is a multifaceted challenge that we face. I will say it's a challenge that I would much prefer to face in contrast to the other challenge which some schools and districts in our state have faced, and that is needing to shutter schools and to kind of downsize. I can use the experience with Caterpillar as an example. We did have conversations not only with Pima County but with other cross-sector partners, including, you know, Sun Corridor and the Metro Chamber and the related industries in the area, such as the mine industry, Freeport-McMoRan. So we were able to reach out, make contacts, and start to at least forecast the potential impact. You know, school construction is a whole another aspect in this state, and it's something that we've had firsthand experience in Sahuarita as we've been a growing community, as has Vail, Marana, some of the others. And we've currently, I can tell you that we're in the process of completing our ninth school, located just south of Sahuarita Road. They're right off of I-19. We're scheduled to open in January. And so I, in terms of capacity, I believe for the foreseeable future, we are prepared and ready to absorb a number, you know, several hundred new students coming into the area for the next few years. But as the region continues to grow, I do expect that it'll be a subject that we will need to continue to tackle.
Our two school districts, yours and Continental Elementary School District down in our area, both have canceled their elections this year because they don't have competitive races. And in fact, it was tough to get that last person in to potentially take over one of the empty spots on the Sahuarita Unified School District Governing Board. And we can see, there was an article in the Star, that lots of districts are having that problem. Now, sometimes we have competitive races, but why do you think lately it is so hard to attract candidates for school boards?
That's a good question, and I would be remiss if I didn't say, in my opinion, being a school board member is one of the last examples of pure public service. It's an unpaid position. It does require a fair amount of time commitment. There are regular meetings to go to. It's important to keep abreast of issues. You're always being briefed and submitted with information. You're an elected person of the public, and so you're getting inquiries at the grocery store, at the park, and and so it is a fair amount of responsibility, and you got to keep up to date. So I know people are busy, and perhaps it's a lot of that. In terms of what it takes, I think we have a lot of people that have what it takes. Maybe they just didn't think of themselves as being the type to have what it takes. To me, if you care about public education and the critical role that it plays in our republic, in our democracy, then you care about public schools, and you could potentially be a school board member. I think if you understand your role to govern and to support the mission of the school, to make big decisions about money and community on a broad level, you could be a good school board member. And if you're willing to serve and you have that heart to do so, you can do it. I think these are busy times, and families are pulled in many different directions, and sometimes folks maybe feel like they don't have time, or B, maybe never gave it a thought. And maybe these articles and this attention will make people reflect in the future that maybe this is a calling. We talked about the word vocation. Maybe this is a calling that people can answer the bell for.
But I think a lot of people also feel like they need to have kids in the district if they're going to be on the board. And I simply don't think that should be the case.
Well, not only do you think it should not be the case, it's actually not the case. I believe the requirements are pretty basic, other than basic citizenship, et cetera, is that I believe you have to be a resident of the boundaries, the legal boundaries of the school district in which you desire to serve for a period of, I believe, 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a period.
Fairly basic.
Fairly basic.
There were some school boards that didn't have anyone run at all. So now the Pima County Superintendent of Schools is going to have to find somebody to appoint to those positions until there's another election cycle. And, you know, it is a very, very tough job. It's unpaid, but it's still a job. It's a lot of responsibility. And because it's about people's children, I think members of the community are very, very passionate about what's going on in schools, and if you're a school board member, you end up being assailed from all sides pretty consistently.
And frankly, you don't want to be out there beating the bushes looking for someone to take up a position, an open position. I mean, you want people who have a passion for education and understanding of it. They have the skill sets to pull off that job. It is a tough one.
Some background knowledge of what's already gone on. They're not coming in completely fresh.
Absolutely. So I want to take you down to Amado, which is where we have one school, Soperi School, and they right now, I believe that school can accommodate 350 to 400 students, and you have 118. I know you have the gifted program down there also. You're not closing the school. You're not talking about it. No one's even suggesting it, but you do have plans to better utilize the space, or at least you're developing those.
You know, from an efficiency standpoint, it's certainly something that will get people's, staff's, board members' attention when you have a school that is significantly underutilized. However, the school is really not unlike a lot of other schools, not to mention districts in Arizona and across our country, particularly in rural Arizona. There are about 210 districts in the state of Arizona, and many of them are rural districts that are at or not much bigger than this one school. It's, again, from an efficiency standpoint, it's not the ideal. You want better economies of scale and efficiencies, et cetera. But, you know, we look at it from the consideration of many factors based on our mission of serving students. You know, transportation, we cover over 600 square miles. And so from the standpoint of safety, transportation, logistics, we serve students as young as 5 years old or younger and moving them about safely. Not to mention the critical role that school plays in that community and its connectedness with the neighborhood and the county and other factors. We just think we need to find solutions, to your point. We're looking to further utilize the space in a way that attracts people. It's a beautiful little school. It's kind of nestled away over there off of I-19. And the kids that go there receive a great education, and the community is very vested, but we need to find a way to use it. And one of the ways we're looking at is exploring the possibility of creating unique, specialized programs, perhaps in the area of science, robotics, computer science, biotechnology, in a way that might attract students to desire to go there, because for the inconvenience of traveling, there's benefit to having this unique experience and finding that niche.
How far away is that school from the other core of your district?
I believe in my many trips down there that it's depending on where in the district, it's about 15-16 miles from the main campus.
So it's a little bit of a trip for folks, but not impossible.
Right. Although I think it's since you mentioned it, Dylan, it's worth pointing out that if that school were not there, we'd be bringing students from places that are 30 miles beyond that.
Yeah.
For a net of about 45-mile commute.
Absolutely. Okay, that is going to wrap it up for our Friday Focus interview. Our thanks to Dr. Manny Valenzuela of the Sabadita Unified School District. Thank you, Manny, for being with us.
It's always my pleasure. I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Thank you. Dylan Smith is going to stick around for our Friday roundtable discussion. We will be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Hey, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. It's that time. U of A tailgating. I mean, this place is sizzling. I gotta have one of those burgers and one of those dogs and, hey, aren't you?
Hey, it's Mark Urban hanging out here with my pal Ollie Farhang.
Woo! Who's under this Arizona Party Rental tent? Ryan.
Ryan Jeffries. And no steak for you.
Oh, yeah, splattered mustard all over your back. Wait a minute. You are?
Ryan Hansen.
Hey, you can join the party, too. Arizona Party Rental, your celebration destination. Online at ArizonaPartyRental.net.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques? It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for a vacationing Bill Buckmaster. I am here with Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. And Dylan, it seems like we have been talking about the primary election, well, forever, the results since Tuesday. And we were on Bill's show Wednesday talking a little bit about it. And PBS tonight, AZ360, is going to have a little bit more on it. And there's still stuff to talk about. We have some interesting local elections, state.
It's a heck of a year for this stuff. So even the primary, I think, was perhaps even more interesting than it is some years.
Absolutely, it was. And I can see only more money being poured into this state. It really has got the spotlight. But
I'm still waiting for my Soros check.
Yeah, see. You can talk to him about that remark, not me. Biggest surprise from Tuesday, or some surprises from Tuesday? What do you think?
One of the biggest, and we didn't really dig into this enough on Wednesday in our immediate post-primary wrap-up, was up in Oro Valley, where all of the incumbents who were on the ballot are ousted.
Dumped.
Which is a huge, huge change.
Including the mayor.
Yeah.
Satish Hiremath, yes.
It will be interesting to see, in practice, how much of a swing this is. And how that council will vote on some things going forward, but that at least with the faces appearing up on that dais and meetings, that's definitely a shift. The other one that surprised me a little bit, you know, you could kind of see it coming, but that Leah Marquez Peterson was not, the runaway sort of candidate that you might have thought if you were just a casual observer. You know, she wasn't out there a whole lot appearing in public. Right from the start, she wasn't, the overwhelming favorite amongst people who were signing nominating petitions. She didn't turn in the greatest number of signatures on her petitions.
So what did she have?
What did she have? She had money, money. You know, she had 10 times as much money as everyone else in the race combined.
Yes.
But She only won by, what, three and a half points?
Percentage points. And Brandon Martin was a big surprise. You're right. Just right on her heels. And perhaps, and we said this Wednesday, if one of the other two candidates had not been on that ballot, she might have been knocked off.
Because pretty much the other three people in that race were running against her from the right wing.
Exactly.
And they so would, yes. It might be, I think it's a safe assumption that those votes would have collapsed on not Leah.
Absolutely. I think that's exactly right. And then she would have been overwhelmed. So
she was the winner. So she moves on.
Okay, now she moves on. But what kind of Leah are we going to see? Are we going to see a different person? She now can't hide. Let's face it. She didn't want to say anything stupid in the primary that could be used against her because she figured she had it wrapped up, which she did.
Yeah.
Just not as cleanly as
she didn't
thought.
Want to say anything a little too moderate that one of the other candidates could seize upon.
Absolutely. And so she gave them no openings whatsoever. She did no what I'm going to call legitimate forums to stand beside the candidates and let people know her views. Now, she was out there, though.
Nothing that was almost none of these candidates did any public forums that were open to the public and the press so that people could, know what was happening and know what these candidates were thinking.
But I want to make no mistake that she was out there. She just wasn't in that public forum setting where we could pit her against the other candidates. She was down here in our area, and I know that the Green Valley Sahuarita Republicans really grilled her when she visited them. But again, it was just her. Mm-hmm. But they absolutely went after her, and she has some very tough questions to answer. So it hasn't been a cakewalk for her, but there was no comparison against the other candidates, which was unfortunate. So does
and
that
look,
have
on,
to
look on the other side what the Democrats did, where it was almost overwhelming with whether you call them forums or debates or town halls, but
right.
They were all out there repeatedly in public being questioned by real journalists, including me, if you count me as a real journalist a couple of times.
I do.
Being put on the spot in front of whoever wanted to be there to listen.
But I thought what was interesting is you look at the money in the Republican race, as we say, the money didn't matter as much because Brandon Martin, who had none.
He had what, $8?
I think, and spent $9. So you had that. But on the Democrat side, you can see that Matt Hines and Ann Kirkpatrick were able to separate themselves from the other five candidates in the race because they did have money.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, money, I don't want to say buys election, but it buys elections.
It buys attention.
Yeah, exactly. And in some cases, it doesn't. So I wonder if the Republicans are thinking to themselves, well, wait a minute, shouldn't Leah Marquez Peterson have done a lot better with all the money she had? And what do you think has to change in her strategy heading toward November?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see who tries to present themselves as the more dynamic candidate, because frankly, neither Ann Kirkpatrick, the Democratic nominee, nor Leah Marquez Peterson, the Republican nominee, are the most amazing of stump speakers, and they're not going to rile up a crowd. So who's really going to try and seize that, and or are we just going to see a ton of slickly produced TV ads inundating the few people who still watch broadcast TV.
Right, and that gets back to the earlier comment that, we're going to have a lot of money poured into the state, and not to kick someone when she's down, but Mary Mattiello, who I thought looked excellent on paper, has a terrific resume, was not one of these candidates who really commanded attention when she was on stage, and for that matter, Matt Hines wasn't either, but both of them absolutely knew what they were doing, and they were strong candidates on paper, but unfortunately, it does come down to a little bit of putting on a show.
Yeah, but that doesn't always, completely sell it. Billy Kovacs was a great candidate speaking to crowds and a great candidate in the forums and, came in rather far down the list. He was out of the seven, what was he, fourth, fifth?
Right. And a lot of people think, though,
I think he had even less money than Brandon Martin. I think he had $750.
Yeah, exactly. But I've also heard that he might be the future of the party, at least in southern Arizona. I mean, he is very well-spoken. He looks good, looks like a good candidate. But you know what? He also has the brain matter behind it.
He learned a lot running this race, I think,
exactly.
Became a different kind of candidate than he was right out of the gate.
Okay, so let's move on over to the Senate races. This is Martha McSally and Kyrsten Sinema, and nobody should be surprised that McSally won the primary and in overwhelming fashion. I certainly wasn't surprised. I never thought that Kelly Ward was the least bit of a challenge to her, and certainly Joe Arpaio wasn't.
And then when you combine Joe Arpaio and Kelly Ward sort of splitting the right-wing slash Tea Party vote, that wasn't going to happen to overwhelm the, clear choice of more establishment Republicans and a whole lot of money.
And you have a writer named Blake Morlock, and he wrote a piece that basically said, "Who are McSally and Sinema? We won't find out soon." What was Blake trying to say in this piece?
These are two candidates who are very, very good about honing their image in public and avoiding taking definitive stands on things. And we'll see in this campaign if they actually, either of them, come down with really firm statements on the most controversial issues that are put before them. Because, they will say some things and pull them back. I mean, famously, most recently, Martha McSally had her name removed from a bill that she had co-sponsored to implement part of the DREAM Act to help recipients of DACA. And over the summer, she decided that that wasn't something she wanted to be associated with anymore as she was trying to fend off these right-wing insurgents in the primary, and had her name taken off of it.
And so that was a lot of criticism against McSally, was that she was edging, frankly, toward the president and wanting to go after those people who perhaps were going to be easy pickings for Kelly Ward and for Joe Arpaio.
Right, and from the beginning, from the moment she announced her campaign, it was clear that McSally was trying to be as close to Trump as she could possibly get after, for the previous 2 years, not wanting to mention his name at all, never endorsed him, still refuses to say if she even voted for him.
Right.
But now, just a couple days ago, right after the primary, President Trump rather enthusiastically tweeted his endorsement of her.
Right. And despite that criticism, though, Martha McSally is one person who has always been her own woman. She has spoken her mind. She has even dropped the F-bomb, famously, and other things, too. She is her own person. And I know in one of her previous campaigns, I said, okay, as you launch into this, who's going to be calling the shots? Is it going to be you, or is it the people running the campaign? Who are we going to see? Is it you, or is it who they think you should be to appeal to voters? And I think in the past she has always been who she is. And this summer it's been a little odd to watch this shift. And
a Senate race, and a vital Senate race, is very different than even a very important congressional race.
Right. The voter registration would be in her favor if it weren't for the fact that there are so many others in Arizona, an incredible amount of people who do not want to align with the two major parties. And so what is that going to be right now? So she has more Republicans on her side if you just look at the registration. But who are these others, and what's going to happen there?
The others are the PNDs, the party not designated, the people who like to call themselves independent voters. Most often people who are independents are still partisan voters. They may cross the aisle every once in a while, but pretty much most people who are registered Democrats or Republicans end up here or there voting for somebody from the other party as well. They're just people who decide they don't want to be that firmly aligned and declare themselves, but in the main they end up either voting for mostly Republicans or mostly Democrats. And speaking of Democrats, Kyrsten Sinema is somebody who has been not getting a whole lot of fervent support from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, and we'll see if those folks decide to show up for her in major numbers just because they want the Democrats to be able to seize control of Congress. She is a somewhat different candidate, has been a different congresswoman than the person she was when she entered politics 20 years ago, when she was a very outspoken leftist. and you know, somebody who was opposed to the Iraq War very loudly, and you know, gained some her first you know, public acknowledgement for being really liberal, and now she is a mainstream, somewhat conservative Democrat, a blue dog, somebody who's been much more fiscally conservative than a lot of liberals have liked.
But I think she still knows she's going to get the Democratic vote. People may be holding their nose, but she knows she's going to get that. Earlier this week on the political face-off on Monday, I was hosting for Bill, and we had John Munger and Jeff Rogers on, and both agreed that they think probably 30% of the voters out there in Arizona still don't know which way they're going to go. I thought that number was way high. I would guess 95% really in their hearts know which way they're going to go in this race. What is your guess? Are there that many people who still don't know?
I don't know if there are that many people who are undecided, if you're just thinking of you know, the general framework of, are they going to vote Republican or are they going to vote Democratic this time around? But as we saw in the previous election cycle, undervoting can really, really hurt candidates. You know, Hillary Clinton won in CD2 quite handily, but Matt Hines, who was running for that congressional seat, lost
quite handily. Yes,
you know, the percentage point swing between the Clinton vote in that district and the vote for him is you know, more than 15 points, if I remember correctly.
Right. David.
So, you know, that's a big gap. So you can't just take it for granted that because, you know, the Democrats are riled up by Trump, that they're going to turn out and fill the Oval for every single Democratic candidate.
And you hit on the key word that everybody's talking about for this election, which is turnout. Are they going to come out and actually do that? And what was our turnout in the primary? Was it 27%, 25%? I don't know. It was pretty low, pretty dismal.
Well, it's always pretty dismal.
Come on, though. There's no excuse.
No, there isn't. But, I mean, it just, you know.
It's embarrassing, quite honestly, you know.
But the Democrats did set, this time, some records for turnout in Arizona. So they are, you know, trying to crow about that. We really have to, I think, see what the effect will be over the next month or so as far as the fervor for people to get out and vote now that a couple of these propositions will not be appearing on the ballot. And these are things that we were looking at potentially really driving some turnout for people who were in favor of them.
Okay, David Garcia versus Doug Ducey in the governor's race. Again, the governor, Doug Ducey, is a Republican. They certainly have the voter registration advantage. Does David Garcia have a chance in this?
A chance? He's got a puncher's chance. You know,
it's a new term.
And when you're looking at some of the statewide races, you know, not the Senate race so much, but if you're looking at the statewide races, it's still, I think, the advantage is to the Republicans, especially for the incumbents like Ducey. Is it possible? You know, it'll take that blue wave to actually come crashing ashore for that to happen.
Okay, we got about 20 seconds here, but I'm going to let you throw in a little commercial for something called Chisme, which in Spanish means...
El Chisme is our column at TucsonSentinel.com, a compilation of rumor and gossip and cold, hard facts. And it's the kind of stuff that we sit around and chuckle about when the microphones are off, when we're at the bar and the beers are on the table. It's, you know, what reporters and political people end up, you know, laughing about. And I think, you know, more regular folks should have the opportunity to learn some of those background tidbits, and we're trying to give that to them.
Very good, and you put it in print. That is going to be our Friday roundtable for this week. My thanks to Dylan Smith for joining me. When
Absolutely.
We return, we are going to give you a little help planning your weekend.
The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Welcome back. It's now time for the weekend watch, the best way to plan your next couple of days. Actually, 3 days. We got a long weekend here. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. There's a lot to do in Silver City and Grant County, like exploring the historic downtown Silver City or visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do, great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. Matt Russell, you there?
I am here. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing terrific, and it's heading into a long weekend for a lot of people, and you're going to give us an awful lot of choices here.
Well, for sure. You know, it's Labor Day weekend when the Wildcats home opener at Arizona Stadium on Saturday, but the official pregame festivities start today at Bear Down Friday at Main Gate Square. It all starts at 3 o'clock with a spirit party all up and down University Boulevard with Wilbur and Wilma, of course, and the U of A pep band, the cheer squad, a lot of things for the kids. But it takes food and drink discounts to really get my attention, Dan, so you don't have to look far for special happy hour pricing on dishes and drinks at most Main Gate Square eateries. It's Bear Down Friday today.
Hey, you know, back in the 80s when I graduated from there, Main Gate didn't have much. I think think it had a Dunkin' Donuts and a couple of bars nobody wanted to go into. But
Bob's Deli, I think that's the one I remember, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So every time I drive by there, I kind of get the shakes. I lived in that dorm built into the side of Arizona Stadium, and yeah, there are some memories there. Let's leave it. So, okay, what else we got?
Well, you know, salsa, tequila, and tacos, three of the basic food groups on my personal pyramid, they're all going to be dished up in abundance at the annual Salsa, Tequila, and Taco Challenge on Sunday night at 7 o'clock at La Encantada. More than 40 restaurants are going to be serving up their best salsas, tacos, and tequila-based cocktails. $60 a person. Tickets are at SACA. That's S-A-A-C-A, SACA.org.
Very good. And we're going to be celebrating some heroes here.
We are. It seems like every dish has its own day, Dan. And fans of Mediterranean cuisine will rejoice in the fact that tomorrow is National Euro Day, not gyro, as so many people say. Euro, like you said correctly.
There we go.
That glorious pita-wrapped blend of succulent beef and lamb and onions and spices and tzatziki sauce. There are several really good gyros around town, but my favorites are at Urban Pita on Congress Street downtown and Pelio Grill on University and Park. Both of their proprietors' families hail from the Mediterranean, so we're talking serious authenticity. I don't know about you, but I need extra napkins tomorrow for National Gyro Day.
Excellent. And now take us out of state here to Sparks, Nevada. What are you doing?
Well, I am judging the nation's largest barbecue rib competition in Sparks this weekend. 500,000 people will collectively consume more than 260,000 pounds of ribs. I have been fasting since Tuesday, and I am preparing my palate for my pork pilgrimage for this once-in-a-lifetime event. I'm so excited about it.
The nation's largest barbecue rib.
Very, very good. Okay, Matt Russell, thank you. Always terrific to hear from you. You got great stuff going.
Cheers, Dan. Thanks.
Okay. And that is going to wind it up for us. The Buckmaster Show is produced by Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for its content. On behalf of our team here at KBOI, including producer, engineer Tom Fairbanks, Ray Allen, Ed Alexander, production supervisor Jerry Cross, station owners Doug and Mary Martin, and Buckmaster Show executive assistant Rosemary Brandt, I'm Dan Shear, wishing you a fantastic weekend. And Bill, welcome home.